And so I'm focused on these $100 problems, maybe $1,000 problems. And it was keeping me from being focused on $1 million problems. So when we focus on present time problems that are so small and forget about the mission, the big, big problems, which is like, where do I want to go? Where do I want to be? It clouds your judgment and it clouds your interpretation of things. So anytime you're like dealing with something and you're like stressed out about it, identify if that's a small problem or a big problem.
What's happening, thriving athletes? Welcome back to the Thrive After Sports podcast. This is a phenomenal episode that I have lined up for you today with Mike C-Rock Sirocco. I was actually on his podcast on the very last episode that I posted here. So check that out if you haven't already. Just had a great conversation. We really hit it off. And then I thought it was only right to bring him on my show. He's a former football player, has done a lot of different things in his life. Multimillionaire, built up a lot of different businesses in a lot of different industries. His main focus right now is an agency called That One Agency, where they're helping people get on more podcasts and creating a network of people to become guests on each other's podcasts. Really cool concept. He shares a lot of life advice, business advice on this episode. And then towards the end, I was enjoying talking to him so much that towards the end is when we really kind of dug into his story and his upbringing and some of the things that made him who he is today. All the C-Rock's information and places to follow him and website information will be in the show notes below, as well as the link to join the Thrive After Sports collaborative community. If you haven't done so already, I'd love to see you inside that group. We have weekly meetups happening every week, a lot of partnerships being formed, a lot of people getting some great advice and finding teammates, employees, running mates, mentors, coaches, you name it. Join the Thrive After Sports community below. I'll see you on the inside. And let's get into this episode with Mike C-Rock Sirocco. Hey, I like to break the audience or the listeners of Thrive After Sports into three different categories. At least what I'm seeing from the analytics, it's like a third current athletes at all levels, professional, collegiate, Olympian, a third former or retired athletes, and then a third like coaches, parents, people in athletic departments, or just people who provide services for athletes. So I thought a good place to start would be, you know, and I'll give you a proper introduction when I do the post recording, but just to start out, how do you typically introduce yourself to people these days? Because I know you wear many hats.
Yeah, I mean, I just tell people my name is Mike. My friends call me C-Rock, and I do a lot of things, but everything is centered through this mission that I'm living on, which is all people are unstoppable to live in a life of their dreams. And so I filter my thoughts, words, and actions through that. And it gives me a really easy decision-making process for everything that I do. So that's kind of what I roll with.
Yeah, man. One of the things that, as I've been listening to your content a lot recently, and I do mean a lot, like daily, I've been not only your podcast, but, you know, I know you've been on a lot of shows. I think you told me you've been on over 900 podcasts before. So, which is crazy, by the way, but I've been listening to some, definitely not all 900, but, you know, who knows, maybe I'll get there. But as I'm listening, man, something that I hear you bring up consistently is this, I don't know if we want to call it like a mantra that you live by, but just this concept that you always talk about of going from surviving to thriving. And that's huge, man, because to me, the whole reason I named my show, my podcast, my coaching business, Thrive After Sports, is based off of that concept of not just surviving when you leave your sport, but thriving and living a life where, you know, you can thrive and live to your fullest potential. So what does surviving to thriving mean to you? And why is that such an important thing for you to always share with people?
Well, I mean, you know, we live this life, right? And most of the things that we've been given instinctually is to survive, to get by, right? We have our ego, we have our pride, we have fear, you know, and these things, you know, are given to us so that we could survive nature, back in the day, like wildlife and knowing that, you know, you should be scared of heights because if you fall, you're going to die or get hurt, right? But as we've evolved, you know, we don't need those things for survival as much anymore. But those things start to be, they start to, you know, we start to use those things beyond surviving and they start to control us. And what happens is eventually we're just living our lives just trying to get by, just trying to get by, just trying to get by. And then we usually fail at things because of that. We come up short of things because of that. So this, you know, for me, thriving is something that like, I want to go after my potential that I've been given by God. I don't know what the potential limit is. None of us know what our potential limit is. But what I found in my life is that I feel inside, I feel it when I'm not going after my potential. If I'm just trying to just get by, it's not good enough. And I feel like I owe it to the creator that gave us this ability to give it my all, And so that's the way I roll. I can't live with myself. I can't lay my head on a pillow at night and feel good about myself if I'm not giving it my, you know, giving it everything I got. And that's trying to thrive, not just survive.
Hey, man, I love how we're already talking about your driving force, not driving force, but tapping into the creator and wanting to honor the creator, whatever you believe in, no matter what anyone listening believes in. But why do you think that's important? You know, sometimes I have conversations with people who would consider themselves atheists, and I'm just thinking to myself, you know, I wonder if there's anything deeper driving them. So why do you think it's important to have that connection to a higher, you know, calling or a higher being, no matter what that being is?
Well, I don't know anything other than I've had too much experience with God to think anything else. I think it's harder to prove that there's not a God than there is to say, you know, there is a God. I mean, I've just seen too much, experienced too much, know too much. So yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, for me, it's that, your question is a good question. You know, all I know is that, I don't know the answer to that question. I really don't, because I don't know any different. You know, like, I don't know any different. There's people that are like, yeah, I'm a Christian, I'm a this, I'm that, I believe in God. But do they really? Or are they just saying that? Because you can't answer the question you asked me. Like, I'm so convicted that there's a God that I can't answer the question why it's important. It's the only thing I know. But some people that can answer that question should probably, and I'm not judging, but they should maybe question their conviction and their faith.
That's a good point. I feel like what you're saying, like, to me, what I'm hearing is like, if you can wrap your mind around it, then like, some people try to figure out God or try to wrap their mind around it. And like you said, so it's easier to prove that God exists versus to prove that God doesn't exist. You can't really prove that it doesn't exist. That's saying that we as humans have like the all-knowing understanding of everything that happens in this world, which is impossible. So we didn't create the world, but anyway, that's a good point. If you can answer the question, then you're probably not thinking deep enough. That's deep within itself. But anyway, man, back to you. We'll probably come back to that at some point during this conversation, because I just enjoyed talking to you. I really enjoyed our last conversation where you had me on your show.
Yeah, me too, man.
But let's go back to your football journey, man. Let's just start there. You played at Salisbury University, right? What position, by the way?
Well, it was Salisbury State University back in the day. And after I left, they changed to Salisbury University because I think it sounded like Salisbury Steak. So I think they changed it because of that. I'm not sure, but no, I played linebacker. I played linebacker and so I played for 2 years.
Okay. I respect it. It's I played DB, and I feel like there's a very special relationship between DBs and linebackers, as well as D linemen. There's just that tight knit group when you play defense. I think we're a little tighter than the other position groups.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. So, I mean, it's like, you know, we have to sell out together. I mean, we're like, you know, it's just one of the things. I played DB too. I played safety when I first got there, and then they moved me to linebacker. So yeah, I'm familiar.
Gotcha. And then you said your son's he plays D-line, right?
Yeah, my son's a D-lineman, a senior, and shout out to Decatur, Stephen Decatur High School, and Nick Scirocco. Yeah, he's a D-lineman and offensive guard. They just had their first game last week, and 49-8
So nice. Not a bad start to the season, you know?
They do things a little differently now, and this school is definitely different. They have year round, and they're just busting their butts all year round. And, you know, it's really great to see finally after camp and all that, you get to that first game and you really see everything pay off, and you get to see like the times that they just wanted to throw in the towel because they were working so hard, and they just get fed up and they get bored with the workouts and all this other stuff. And then they come in and they see the results. And that moment they get to see the results of all their hard work, man, there's nothing like it.
Mm-hmm. I got to go back to when you were leaving Salisbury State at the time. So when you left, I'm assuming, like me, I went to Stony Brook. I was like, I'm probably not going to the league. But did you have NFL aspirations, like going into college and playing ball?
When I was little, I did, but then I never grew big enough and I was never fast enough. So I was like, I figured I might as well get into, I thought I was going to be a sports broadcaster after that. So no, not NFL for playing, but maybe coaching or sports broadcaster or something like that. I never went after that though. I don't know why. But.
Okay. So what happens after graduation then? Like football's over, you didn't pursue sports broadcasting. Like what did you do?
Well, so for me, I was very serious about my football career going into college. After I graduated, I didn't drink alcohol until I got out of high school. Never touched anything, went to parties, but just never. Everything was school, focus, sports, football, that's it. And when I got to college, though, because I come from a small town, when I got to college, I saw girls that I had never seen before. I saw parties. And I lost my focus because when I got there, I started to realize that college football is like a job. It's different. It's less fun. And there's guys in front of me that were just super athletes, even at Division III. And I just like, man, you know, I'm coming here doing this. And let me go check out the parties. And when I saw the girls, like I honestly just lost focus, man. I lost focus on football and all that. I got focused on the parties. And in doing that, started drinking, smoking marijuana. And then it became like the main thing every day was like, where's the next party? Where are the girls? Where's the next party? Where's the girls? And that's all we were concerned with. And so for 2 years, I went through this thing where I was half-assing football and I wasn't feeling good about myself. And I knew I had who I had inside of me. I had alcoholism in my family. I had drug addicts in my family, anxiety, depression, suicide in my family. And here I found myself after rebelling against all that in high school. When I got to college, I got sucked into it. I allowed myself, I take full responsibility. I got sucked into it. And here I am going down the same road that I witnessed family members go down and half-assed football for 2 years. And I lost who I was, who I truly was at that time. And so the reason after 2 years, I ended up actually stopping playing football. As soon as football was over, I had one semester of college that stuck out and I lost focus of that because when I stopped playing football, I felt like I lost all the structure I had and I was lost. So that's what happened. And I ended up going, some of you may have watched the movie Cocktail with Tom Cruise, where they say they're going to open up a bar and go to the Caribbean and open up a bar and get into restaurant business. And I watched that movie and I thought I was Tom Cruise. I was going to do that. So I went into restaurant business. That's not good for alcohol and drugs, because if you get into bar business, it's late, it's cash. Everybody has a party after the bar because, you know, you don't have to get up early the next day. And, you know, you're in that scene and it's a mess if you allow it to be. So that's what happened to me.
So you left school and you were still in party mode. Like, I've never seen that movie, but that's funny. You were like, I'm going to be like Tom Cruise. I would open up a bar, just kind of live the party life. Like, so what happened with that? Like, did you said you didn't end up opening a bar?
No, I was in the restaurant business and I never went beyond bartending and waiting tables. And, I had a customer that came in all the time. He became my mentor. His name was Joe. And he invited me to come work at his company in sales, in home sales. And I did that and up working for him for 9 years and getting myself together and refocused. And even during that beginning of that job, I was partying all the time. I was going to work. And then as soon as I would get off work, I'm like, where's everybody? Let's go hang out. And every night I have to be at the bar because I was in a mode. I don't know where this came from. Maybe it was just, I didn't know who I was at the time anymore. I just was trying to please other people or fit in this mold. And I couldn't sit at home by myself, man. Like I didn't have the ability to feel comfortable sitting at home, just chilling. I had to have action. I had to be around people. And, you know, I had to, you know, that's basically, yeah. So that's what happened. And I ended up eventually getting that in-home sales job. And I eventually started realizing, like, I got to figure things out. I got to clear things up. Well, I ran into my wife. I met my wife for the first time and immediately knew that I was going to marry this lady. And I just, I had to straighten myself up to do it. You know, I had to get myself into a situation where I was, you know, someone that I would want to be with if I was a girl. I don't know if that makes sense, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. She was the motivation for you to really clean up your act and try to step up to the plate and be a man. Yeah. That's great, man. Let's talk about Joe for a little bit. So you said you worked for Joe for 9 years and he wasn't just a boss. He was like a mentor to you. Like, what kind of things did you learn outside of the world of sales? Did he teach you about life? Did he teach you about anything else that just kind of helped shape who you were, who you were becoming?
Yeah. I mean, you know, definitely about sales and understanding that game, but then also understanding about responsibility and, you know, he was just there for me, you know, kind of being there for me to talk to and get me out of holes and, you know, show me what not to do again. And, you know, kept me busy and focused. He would be like driving me like, "Hey man, you working Saturday? You know, and I'd be like, "No, nah, I mean, I'm going out Friday." Like, no, you gotta work Friday. We got leads, man. You gotta fill. So that kind of thing. He would try to keep me focused and busy that way. And I think that was one of the main things. And then he tried to really lean into the financial literacy part and help me to, you know, start understanding creating monthly recurring revenue in a business and those kind of things.
Mm. So it's fascinating because I've talked a lot on this podcast about how a lot of us as athletes, we go into sales. And I think a lot of it is because, I mean, frankly, I went into sales just because I didn't know what else I was going to do. And sales jobs are always hiring and they're always looking for athletes. And people are like, "You're competitive. You should get into sales." And although I'm grateful for the experience and everything is sales, as you know, I don't have to tell you that. But for those of the listeners, everything is sales. You're always selling all the time, no matter what you're doing. But I feel like it gave me a great experience. But I kind of went into it blindly or just because I didn't know what else to do. But you stayed there for 9 years, like in that role, which means, I mean, it sounds like you found your lane. So I'm curious what happened after the 9 year period and what, you know, what kind of shift you made and like what caused that shift in your trajectory.
Well, listen, 9 years I stayed in it because I was feeling, I get in these modes sometimes where I feel like I'm trapped. I find something I'm good at. I do well at it and I'm not great at, you know, the income wasn't great, but I got into something where it was like consistent, steady, and I can do it and I could be comfortable. Right. And I got in this mode. I'm like, at some point I felt like I couldn't quit. I felt trapped. Like what else am I going to do? And I didn't want to go into that uncomfortable uncertainty feeling. At that age, I started feeling like that. So I dealt with that several times. Well, it came to a point where I was watching my other friends make money in real estate and this different things. And I'm like, you know, I want to get my real estate license, but it felt uncomfortable. And I was inside afraid of that, being uncomfortable, right? With all the uncertainty that would come along with it. But what little did I know, Taj, is that 9 years had built me into like a machine. I could handle building rapport, rejection, closing, presentation, handling objections, all that stuff. Like I could do that. Real estate became easy to me because I could deal with people. And so I realized, man, I can make money outside of this. I don't have to do this crap anymore. And so then I got into that real estate game and then the mortgage game. And then just it built me to handle objections, confrontation, being able to confront people, handle customer service, really just deal with things. And so I don't regret being in that for 9 years because I guess that's what it took and I had to cook, but I was feeling like trapped for a while because I felt like, what else can I do to make this kind of money? Then I went into mortgages and 17 years I was in the mortgage business and I up-leveled big time. I made millions in the mortgage space, but I got that trapped feeling again because now it wasn't about money. It wasn't about money. It was like, I don't want to do this business the rest of my life. Like, I don't want to be a mortgage guy. I don't want to deal with real estate agents and I don't want to deal with people shopping for the lowest rate. And I don't want to deal with that stuff. That's not what I want to do. I'm built for more, but I felt trapped again because I'm like, where can I make this kind of money? This kind of money is like, you know, so my life, I guess you could say there's a reoccurring theme of feeling trapped and then breaking out of those bars, so to speak, or that cage, so to speak. And every time I've done it, I go through that period of uncertainty, but then I figure it out and it's always better.
Okay. This is good. I'm so glad you're bringing up like how this is a recurring pattern for you, because I think sometimes people feel alone in that where they're like, "Oh, I'm in this thing, but I don't like it. Now I feel stuck." And I just find myself in the same situation and just like in a different room. And so through all the periods where you have felt stuck and then broken through to figure out what the next thing is, like, what are you saying to yourself during these times? Like, how are you even beginning to put the pieces together to figure out where you need to pivot and what that next move is?
But a problem, we talked about this when you came on my show, the problem that I found later on in life is that I was identifying with the businesses that I was in, and that was my identity. And when really, it's actually your vehicle. You're driving a vehicle, the sales job, the real estate job, the mortgage job, the restaurant business, whatever it is, the athlete, football player. That's your vehicle to achieve something. It's not who you are. It's not who you are, but it becomes who you are if you allow it. You don't understand this. And then when that falls apart, that thing falls apart. And the reason I was feeling trapped is because I was identifying as that vehicle. Instead of saying, this is who I am, I drive this vehicle, mortgages, real estate, football player, and I can come in and out of that vehicle whenever I want to. I'm self-determined to come in and out, not stuck in. But when you identify something and you feel stuck in, and that's what I clearly came up with. I clearly identified as my situation. What was causing that trapped feeling was I was identifying in the vehicle, not the industry, not the vehicle. It wasn't a vehicle for me.
That's good. Damn, that's good. I just came up with the title of the episode right there. Your identity versus your vehicle or something like that. That's going to be the title. I like that. So let's talk about, this is kind of a side note, but I was like, when I get C-Rock on here, I got to ask him about this. Cause I was watching one of your videos either last night or the day before. Yeah, it wasn't a podcast. It was a solo video. And you were telling this story about like, needing bigger problems. And it was something that like, there was a bunch of orders coming to the house and you were like, oh, this is $1,000 problem, but I need to be focused on, I'll let you tell the story. You tell it better, but can you just talk about the difference?
Yeah.
Because that was something huge I wanted to ask you about today.
Well, what you're referring to is I think I was in the mortgage business back then, but this is when Amazon started to come around. UPS was coming to the house all the time. And I was like, damn, every time I come home from work, there's packages at the door. And all I could see was money. My wife's spending money. My wife's spending money. My wife's spending money. And I'm like, God, what the hell's going on here? And so I'm focused on these $100 problems, maybe $1,000 problems. And it was keeping me from being focused on $1 million problems. So when we focus on present time problems that are so small and forget about the mission, the big, big problems, which is like, where do I want to go? Where do I want to be? It clouds your judgment and it clouds your interpretation of things. So anytime you're like dealing with something and you're like stressed out about it, identify if that's really a small problem or a big problem. See, what happened with me is I was clouded in my judgment because here I was focused on these little $1,000 problems. And I didn't realize that nowadays grocery shopping, things that my wife was already spending money on before out, she wasn't having to go out to do it. Now she was having it delivered to the house. So we weren't spending more money, but it appeared that way to me because I was stuck on this small problem. Then what I decided to do, what changed everything for me is like, okay, I don't care if my wife spends money. I'm going to go out and outpace her. And I turned it into a game and I created a big problem for myself. And I said, if I make millions, which make my problem millions of dollars, these $1,000 problems are going to seem minuscule.
What's happening, beautiful people? I had to interrupt this episode really quickly just to ask you for a small favor. If you're listening to this episode, you're getting value from it, or if you've gotten value from any podcast episode you've ever listened to on the Thrive After Sports podcast, will you do me a favor right now? And please just leave me a 5-star rating or review. If you don't have time to write a review, just click the 5-star button in Apple Podcasts. Or if you're listening or watching on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, click the like button. It really helps get the message out about Thrive After Sports and this mission that I'm on to help more athletes not just survive, but thrive in life after sports. Aside from that, follow your boy on Instagram at Taj Deshaun. Connect with me on LinkedIn. Really appreciate you guys tuning into the show week after week. The show is growing. You guys are continuing to share it. I can't thank you enough. I appreciate you guys tuning in. Let's get back to this episode. Peace. I think I told you when I was on your show, I got my first kid on the way. My son's due in December. And I like what you said right now about playing that game with yourself where like I want my wife, she's already tapering off. She's not really working anymore. So I'm slowly but surely becoming a stay at home mom. So we're tapering off to one income, but I'm going to start playing a game with myself, man, to make it happen before he's born, which only gives me about a couple of months, but I think I can make it happen. And you just inspired me with that right now. So
don't say you think you can. Just do it.
Okay. I received that. I needed to hear that.
And do it in one month instead of two.
Sir, yes, sir.
There you go. Okay. That's what you got. That's the kind of thing. Like, I got a problem. I only got 2 months. Well, that's a small problem. How about you do it in 2 weeks? That's a big problem. You see how you can make small problems into big problems? Mm-hmm. And then it seems like, oh, 2 months would be great. 2 months would be easy compared to that.
Damn, man. Okay. I was about to ask you the most selfish question ever. We're going to save that for an offline conversation, though. So mortgage, like that was at the time you were in the mortgage business where you had that, you know, $1 million problem versus $1,000 problem. So what, like, I know there's, I don't want to skip any steps, but like, how do you go from that time in your life, that moment, that epiphany, so to speak, while you're in the mortgage biz to like everything that you're doing now and everything you've done since then? Was that another case of like getting out of the vehicle and the identity, and then you just made the switch into another direction? Like, let's talk about that.
Now, 2018, we built a company to eight figures, but I didn't do it the right way. I didn't build foundation. I didn't have core values. I didn't have mission. I was all just chasing production, not focused on the right people in the environment. It's just taking anybody that would come in that could produce. And all the problems in my life have always stemmed from allowing the wrong people in my environment and allowing them to stay too long. And some of the time, I was the wrong person for the environment. So I started to realize that when things came crumbling down, and this is the last time I identified with what I did. It was the mortgage business, 2018. It came crumbling down. I identified as a mortgage, like, mogul, mortgage division manager. Like I was, you know, crushing it. And when that came crumbling down, I lost my identity. I'm like, who am I? And that's when I decided at that moment, I would never let that happen again. I'm never going to identify with the vehicle. It's my vehicle. And I'm going to create a personal brand. I'm going to identify who I am. Who am I? And I'm going to clearly define that through my mission, my vision, and my core values. And I'm going to create the C-Rock brand. And I'm going to make C-Rock a brand name. That's going to be who I am. And I went out and did that. Now, everything I did from that point forward was vehicles. I have this mission, core values and all that, but my vision and my mission's out here. And everything I do from now on, whether it was the mortgage business, that one agency that we started, my personal brand, my podcast, all that stuff, it all was vehicles that I was driving to get to the mission. And so that changed everything. So now, look, if my agency doesn't do well, by the way, I got out of the mortgage business in April, right? If I'm out of the mortgage business in April and I identify with that, I didn't have a problem this time. Because I was like, that's just a vehicle I'm getting out of. That vehicle's old. I'm getting in a new vehicle. It's going to take me further because I'm not satisfied with the way the mortgage business got me. That was good, but I got to sacrifice good for great. And I'm going, I want to be phenomenal. I don't want to be great, phenomenal. And sometimes, you know, you get settled into that good, and that's a really bad place to be when you're trying to be phenomenal.
Mm. The good, yeah, the good gets in the way of you being phenomenal, and it's settling. You use the word settling. Sometimes we settle on things that are good. Kind of like me just a moment ago where you told me, like, why take 2 months? You can do it in one. Like, okay. So now there are a lot of people, and we talked about this also when I was on your show, who reach out to me, a lot of former athletes, because of the identity piece, the identity versus the vehicle, and the you know, being stuck in that vehicle, but looking at the vehicle as your identity. A lot of people, when they're done, they just feel like, I don't even know where to begin to pick up the pieces to like try to figure out what vehicle I want to get in, or like to craft that vision or that picture. So can you share some advice with those folks watching or listening about, if you're completely lost, you don't even know where to begin, how do you begin to put that vision together for yourself so that you can then go out and execute on it?
Well, first thing is you do have to get clarity on what you want, right? But how do you do that? Okay, you can write out a story about your life. And, you know, I like to always talk about being a screenwriter and just writing a story about a guy. And that guy's me, and I'm writing my life out. No limits. But how do you figure that out? Because some people don't even know what they want. Well, what lights you up? What excites you? You know, like at this moment in life right now, what excites you? Now, if I was back in my early 20s, I would say women. At that time, I might have been, you know, wanting to become a party promoter, or, you know, whatever, or a photographer of women in bikini. I don't know. Like, that would light me up, right? Like, that's what matters, though. Like, you got to think about this. So what lights you up? What excites you? Right now, for me, it's helping people become unstoppable. I love helping people. I believe that you can only have to the degree that you help. I'll say that again. You can only have to the degree that you can help. So the more I help, the more I can have. So I understand that, and I'm obsessed with helping people. So what is it that lights you up and excites you? That becomes your reason, your why, your purpose, and that's what drives the vision. So, you know, like people can very easily tell you what excites them. I mean, if you ask them questions like, what lights you up? What gets you excited? You know, some people, it's sports. Okay, well, what do you want to do in sports? What would light you up in sports? What part? What involvement? Recruiting, coaching, training, counseling players afterwards, being a broadcaster, reporter. Like what is it that, you know, what would you want to do in sports? And then some people say, well, yeah, I'd like to make money too. Okay, well, let's figure out how you can make money doing this too. And then see how this dialogue starts, questions, and then another question comes, and another question comes, another question comes. And you just start that way. And you just work with your imagination and questions. One question will, you know, bring up another question. Before you know it, you have a story, which is the vision. And then you start thinking about this vision. Okay, my vision is here. This is what I want. And so now I have to have my thoughts, my words, and my actions, and the environment that I keep go towards the vision. Everything that goes against that vision, thoughts, words, actions, environment, I have to get rid of. And it makes it very clear to make decisions, very easy to make decisions, very simplified now, because everything either goes towards the vision or away from the vision.
First of all, I love that idea of writing out a screenplay. I've never heard anybody talk about that before. And it's crazy because I had nobody tell me this, but I actually did that at a point in my life where I was really lost. A few years after I was done playing football and I was in the workforce, I just started with like my birth. Instinctively, I felt the need to do that, writing it up to that day. And then I kind of started writing it more into the future. So I've never heard anybody give that type of advice before. Hell, I haven't even given that advice to people. That's something I did, you know? So, and then like with everything you just shared, which was, I mean, it was all great. But one of the biggest things I'm taking away is like, you're saying, even if you don't know where you want to go, you have to be taking some sort of action and asking yourself questions. And you said the questions you ask will lead to other questions. But like, that's a muscle that most people, not just athletes, like most people aren't used to flexing or using the muscle of asking yourself questions and thinking about your life. You feel like a lot of people just kind of go through the motions and don't take time to think about where they want to go or who they want to be.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, I want to tell you on a story thing. Some people say, well, why did you write? You haven't really accomplished anything yet. Like, why are you writing a story about your life? This book, Rocket Fuel, it has lessons in it, but it has stories about my life. And I did exactly what you're saying. I wrote my life out in this book, right? And then after I wrote the book, I started writing the future. It's not in a book, but I started writing the future in my story that I would write. So I wrote the book like that. And so I don't care what people think. Like, who are you to have a memoir? It's what I want to do. If you don't want it, don't read it. But this is what I did. And I'm where I am now from this point that you see in the book from when I was a kid till now. And now I'm writing my future and I'm creating my universe. Now, but to answer your question, if you don't set intention with your life from when you wake up in the morning for every day, week, month, and you don't set your own intention, be self-determined for what you want, your goals, your dreams, the alternative, you know what the alternative is? The alternatives is someone else's intention, someone else's goals, someone else's dreams. So you can either create your own and live by those and create your own world and universe cause your own future, or you're going to be doing someone else's. It could be the media's, it could be the governments, it could be friends, family, your environment. And you start living in their expectations and their goals. And that's what happens to a lot of people. A lot of people go into professions and industries because of their parents or their friends or their teacher, their guidance counselor told them that they should do that. Instead of being self-determined and saying, who am I? What do I like? What lights me up? And I don't have to follow society. I don't have to follow the media. I don't have to follow what's on TV or social media. I can do whatever the hell I want to. Put their stake in the ground and then start living off that way. And that's the choice. You have that choice to do it yourself, be self-determined, or you have a choice of letting somebody else dictate the way you want to live.
Mm-hmm. Man, solid advice, by the way. That's not even advice. That's just like, I'm excited to listen back to this episode because I'm going to hear that part again and be like, yeah, there's a couple parts I already know. I'm going to be listening back to this and be like, yeah, see, Rock, tell him. But you actually beat me to it, because my next question was going to be about the book, and I actually ordered it already. I was hoping it would get here before the interview, but I was like, I'm not going to not interview C-Rock just because I didn't read the book yet. But one of the things I love just about the concept of the book, I've heard you talk about it multiple times. Can you talk about what Rocket Fuel is and why you decided to write a book about that topic?
Yeah. See, I grew up in a broken home. I don't remember my parents together. And so in knowing, you know, being in that situation, a lot of people probably listen can relate that, you know, the every other weekend stuff, the custody battle, the child support battle, you had step parents into the mix. Then they start having kids, two of them. And then there's all kinds of, it's a lot of chaos and confusion. And there's a lot of conflict in most cases because there's a lot of insecure people out there. And so jealousy arises, this and that. Well, when I was 8, my mom decided to move on to her third marriage. And I didn't want to move into another man's house, learn another man's rules. I felt at 8 years old, I was man enough to make a decision that I want to try my dad's house. I never lived there full time. And he was moving on to a second marriage. And she seemed nice enough. And I was going to go there. Now, in doing that, I lived there for 3 years. It was good at first, but then I slowly started to see some conflict. I saw a lot of fighting, a lot of like just arguing. My stepmom didn't get along with my mom or my dad's side of the family. A lot of times it was taken out on me, and there was threats. And I just, there's nights I slept with my baseball bat. I didn't, you know, from based on what I was hearing. And I went through this for like 3 years, and I'm thinking to myself, like, this is ordinary. This is what you got to go through. I don't know. This is just all I knew. Well, very, very quickly started, you know, about 2 years in, started to realize this isn't normal. And I shouldn't have to be in this environment. And I started figuring out ways to get out of the environment. Remember, I told you I like live this life of feeling trapped at times. Mm-hmm. So there's another instance. I was trapped. I didn't know that, like, I can't move out of here. Then I'm going to jeopardize a relationship with my dad if I tell my mom about what's going on. And so all this stuff was going through my head as an 8 to 10 year old, right? Well, eventually I just made the move. I'm like, I'm telling my mom about this because I got to get the hell out of here. She filed court papers. And I was scared to death because I thought, you know, once this happens, man, my dad's going to be pissed at me, you know? And so eventually those court papers were delivered to my mom's or to my dad's house, came home from school one day. And my dad had these papers in his hand. And I was like, oh, man, my dad was my hero. He was a Mason. I have bricks back here because it just reminds me of like my dad was a hard worker, rough hands. If you shook his hand, you knew he's a hard worker, big forearms. And he used to carry wad $100 bills in his pocket with a rubber band around it. And he used to show us what money got because he would take the money out and show us the $100 bills. And this is what hard work gets you. And I always looked up to him for that. Well, he came back with these court papers and he sent me to my room and I was sitting there and he said, what's up with this paper here? It says that you want to move back with your mom. I don't understand that because you got it made here. You go out to dinner all the time. You got everything you need. You go back to your mom's, you know, look, she's got men coming in and out of the house. She doesn't have any money. You want to go back to that? And I'm about 10 years old now. I'm like, you know what? I made my mind up. I'm not getting in an argument, discussion. I've already made my mind up. He said, okay. So he takes a wad of $100 bills out that he always carried around, peeled one off, crumpled it up, and he threw it at me. He said, here, you're going to need this when you're living on the streets with your mother then. And he walked out. And I thought to myself, oh, what did I do? Like, what did I do? And you know, I still think back to that time. Like, I was a young kid. I didn't have a lot of experience and knowledge. I didn't know what the hell was going on. But one thing about me is I'm very stubborn. And I thought to myself, you know what? I'm not going to need that money. I'll show you. So for 30 some years, and this is in the book, 30 some years, I drove off of that moment that when things got tough, I wouldn't quit because I wasn't going to let him win. When things went well, I wanted to take it to the next level. I'm like, I got to keep going. And I lived off that for 30 years. I didn't realize it was subconscious that I was living off that, but realized that about 4 years ago, I started to realize, hey, this is a good concept. What I did was I took, and this happened more in my life. When things came my way, I wouldn't store it in my trunk for long. Most people keep all this toxicity and negativity in their trunk and it weighs them down and slows them down. I was storing it in my tank and I was converting it into rocket fuel. And I became unstoppable because nothing could stop me. Anything that came my way that would normally seem like it would slow you down or stop you, I was converting. And that would just push me farther and faster. So I wrote about that. That's the rocket fuel law. Store it in your tank instead of your trunk. Come unstoppable. And I wrote about that and wrote about the story and other incidents that happened in my life where I used that law. And it's been great.
What's up, Thriving Athletes? One more quick interruption, then we'll get back to this episode. If you haven't done so already, please click the link in the show notes to join the Thrive After Sports collaborative community, or you can visit TajDeshaun.com and on the homepage, click join our community. We'd love to see you on the inside, especially if you are a current athlete, former athlete, or someone who serves the athlete community. The Thrive After Sports community is the place for you. I'll see you on the inside. Back to this episode. Peace. That's incredible, man. I love that, you know, store it in your, don't store it in your trunk, store it in your tank. I think that's huge, and because everybody has some sort of story that they could lean on to make themselves a victim. And what you just shared and what you're teaching and sharing to others through your story is like, there's no, like, you don't have to do that. And you're holding yourself back by doing that. And I think that's such an important message, especially in a climate today, as you know, where victimhood is almost celebrated in many different ways. It's kind of a strange time where victims are heroes. And for you to tell people like, no, you just put it in your tank and not your trunk, and that's going to take you where you need to go. Now, what I did want to ask you about that, though, is you said for 30 something years or for 30 years, that moment was driving you. Was there a point where you started using a different fuel source, whether it was like a positive one or a negative one, to continue to push you to where you are today?
Yeah, I mean, I think once you go through personal development and you start like generating this confidence and this different view and have a higher self-worth, you start to say, you know, that toxicity doesn't really help me anymore because I can't, you know, it doesn't even affect me because I already know it's not toxicity anymore. It's really lessons and it's really data to make new decisions on. So the next thing you do when you refine your engine is you need a higher octane fuel, and that higher octane fuel you're referring to is goals and dreams. And then that, you know, you put something out in front of you in the future calls and creating. And when you do that, it's like a really powerful, clean fuel. And it pushes you faster and further, pulls you forward. So yes, that's the answer to that question.
Oh, that's great, man. I was enjoying talking to you so much. I kind of lost track of time. We didn't even really get to talk about what you're up to today and, you know, a lot of the great things that you have going on right now. Can you just talk a little bit about your current businesses and even where you're going and like what's next for you? All that type of stuff I'd love to hear about.
Yeah. So 4 years ago, I started to realize something that, you know, I didn't want to be in the mortgage business anymore. And I wanted to cause and create my future, do what I want to do. And I realized that if I got known, that it would be so much easier. What I mean by got known is like, you know, not just in my local market where I was doing the mortgage business and all that, but if I got known globally, like really got known, like an influencer, like somebody knows who I am and what I do and why I'm amazing. I differentiated myself between all the other people out there. And C-Rock, if somebody said C-Rock, oh yeah, dude, it's C-Rock. Yeah, I know who C-Rock is. You know, that's what I started thinking in my head. And I started thinking about like, well, how can I do that? And when I started asking questions leads you down a road. Started asking questions. Some dude asked me to come on his podcast. And I'm like, I don't even know what a podcast is, man. I'm good. I don't know. He's like, no, you come on. He's like, here, I'm going to give you a short list of things you need. So I went on his podcast. And I think I was going through my mind, Taj, is like, who am I to be interviewed by someone? Mm. And when I started to get on that show and somebody started asking me questions, I started feeling my confidence rise. My self-worth started rising. And I was like, wow, I could do this. I freaking love this. I'm good at this. And I also realized that content, this long-form content, can be chopped up into multiple micro pieces and I can stick it out on all social media platforms. And here's the important part, become omnipresent to the people that matter to my business. Now, everybody matters, okay? But not everybody matters in your business. I don't need 8 billion people on the planet to know who I am. I need the specific people in my business that would be customers, prospects. I need them to know who I am, and I need to become omnipresent to them so they can't escape my message. They see me everywhere. Everywhere they look, they see C-Rock. And I realized that on that first episode. So then what I did was I leaned into podcasting. I did 7 to 10 episodes a week. Over the last 3.5 years, I've done over 900 podcasts, okay? And I got really good at it. And what I did was I also saw the power in podcasting, the network, the Google search optimization for your name because you're on all these shows, the authority that comes, the credibility that comes, the trust. And I started to realize April 20, 2022, that I had this blueprint, this formula that I needed to share with other entrepreneurs, speakers, consultants, trainers. And when I realized that, I said, I have an obligation and duty to start a business. And we created that one agency. And in doing that, now we work with all these folks doing the same thing I did and getting them exposure and helping them become omnipresent to the people that matter in their business. And we've quickly become the number one podcast agency, podcast booking company in North America, maybe the world, because I don't know what's going on outside North America. But I believe that we're the top podcast booking agency in the world. And in a year and a half, we're doing that and we're continuing to grow. And if anybody out there has not implemented podcasting in their business as a strategy to become known, build authority and credibility, marketing, you're missing the boat. And they should reach out to me.
And what's the best way for them to reach out to you or and follow you and all of it, everything?
Yeah. So if you go on Instagram at Mikey Crock, MikeyCroc, you'll see big following there and big lot of content. And then that one agency.com is where you can go and check us out and book a call with our team.
Yeah, man. I'm actually meeting with someone with Todd from your team next week. So I'm excited about that because the proof is in the pudding. I'm seeing what you're doing. I know a lot of people who listen to this show, the people who reach out to me, inevitably, these are athletes who have an entrepreneurial spirit, right? Some people do want to go into the corporate world, and I'm happy to help with that. Over half of the people who reach out to me, they want to be entrepreneurs. They want to have their own thing going, or at least, you know, team up with other people to do it. And I'm always telling people, you got to have a podcast, right? And I help them kind of get up and running. But, you know, based on what you're doing, the networking piece, helping people get on each other's shows, I think that's huge. You kind of already touched on it a little bit, but what's next? Or are you in this period right now where you're so focused on what you got going on that you haven't really started to map out the next chapter yet? But knowing you, you probably have the next chapter mapped out.
Well, there's other things like in this agency that we're adding, right? I'm going to do everything I do to be successful. I want to add into this agency to create opportunity for other people to learn what we're doing and help them in their business do that. So that's number one. We're going to scale this business out. But the other thing is I have this thing inside of me that I should be working with athletes, doing something with athletes, whether it's getting them known, like, you know, the NIL deals that are out there now. And I just have this thing where I'm like, a lot of these athletes aren't known and they have helmets on, especially football players. But if I could start working with them and getting them on podcasts so they get known and build their personal brands, that would help them immensely get NIL deals and help them get in the league and this and that. So I have that thing on my mind a lot lately. And then the other thing is film and TV. I don't know where this comes from, but I just feel like I should be working in film and TV, being on screen. And I don't know where that's coming from, but I'm exploring that.
Okay. Now I'm super curious about that. When you say on film and on TV, like, are you talking about in movies? Are you talking about hosting something? What are we talking about? Or all of the above?
Yeah, I mean, all of the above. Like, there's plenty of opportunity out there, and I have what it takes. So, like, I know there's a lot of people out there that want to, but they just don't have it. I have it. I already know that. I have firm belief in myself, certainty. It's just a matter of where I want to start and where it's going to, you know, I don't want to force anything. You know, wait, just being open to the opportunities that have come along. So, yeah.
Well, cool, man. I think that's a good place to wrap it up. This has been incredible, man. Thank you for spending some time with the Thrive After Sports family today. For those of you guys listening or watching, check the show notes. All Crock's information will be in there so you can follow, tap in with that one agency. Yeah, man, any parting words for those listening? Anything you want to share as we close out with the Thrive After Sports family?
Yeah, man. Who are you? You got to ask yourself that question. Who am I? You're not what you do. You are who you are. So pay attention to that, because I've interviewed over 500, 600 people now. And the common thing I hear when they had their worst time in their life is because they lost their identity, because they identified with the vehicle they're in, what they were doing versus who they actually were.
There it is. Thank you again, Crock. You're the man. Appreciate this.
Thank you, man. Appreciate you.
For those of you guys listening, it's been another great episode of Thrive After Sports with Mike Crock Sirocco. We'll see you on the very next episode. Peace.